something that was warned to us is like nothing is just split in the middle because of things like royalty structures and how the business is built. For better or for worse, nothing is as on the surface as it seems. There's always that extra layer that we had to be cautious about, which we learned very quickly what those different caveats were. As we were talking,
everything having to do with this song that we have a deal with, we have to make sure, like, does this align with what we signed in the contract? You know, we're not going against anything, and it's all kosher. So it's a shared responsibility of the song.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features. Annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business. Third edition just came out. It's available at all bookstores, but they've been selling out fast, so go pick it up. Today, my guest is The Rare Occasions. They are a trio based here in LA, originally from Boston. They moved out to LA around 2016. They did the indie grind for many, many years, released a bunch of records, and then, end of 2021, something happened that we've been hearing this story now. They went viral on TikTok, or they had a song that actually had been released years prior in 2016, went viral on TikTok. It got, you know, hundreds of millions of views across all of the videos that were made, like 160,000 people made video, actually more than that, but made videos to their song. They were quickly offered major label record deals by virtually every major label out there. They signed with Elektra Records, a single deal. We get into all the details of how this all went down and the details of this deal that they signed. And, you know, that song, their song Notion, went on to get over 300 million streams currently to date. They have 5 million monthly listeners currently. Oh, but they got dropped. The deal that they signed with Elektra Records was just for a single, and now we're starting to see what's happening to these TikTokers or the artists that get signed because of a TikTok viral moment and viral song. Many get signed and then get dropped. And they had a record deal for all of 8 months, I want to say. So we talk about this whole journey of what happens after a song goes viral on TikTok and what happens to the band. So you're going to really enjoy this interview. I think we're shining some light. Not many people are talking about this story. And I appreciate that the guys came on to be transparent about their story. And they're not afraid of their story. And they're actually embracing it. And you're going to learn a ton of what is happening right now, 2023, in the new music business with artists that can actually cut it, because these guys are incredibly talented, great songwriters, great musicians, great performers. They have that stuff. Oftentimes the TikTokers that rise and fall don't have the stuff, but these guys do. So the conversation was great. Really enjoyed chatting with them. They tell their whole story, their whole journey, and we spent a lot of time on the deal. You can find them at The Rare Occasions everywhere, especially of course on TikTok, where they have over 170,000 followers there, but of course on Instagram and Spotify. And they'll be going on tour later this year again, so check them out when they come through your town. You can find all of us that make the show happen at Ari's Take on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. You can find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram and Twitter. Visit ariestake.com. Get on the email list. That's where you're going to get the most up-to-date, relevant information about the new music business. We send out newsletters and blasts and stuff. The most important information we send out to that newsletter. So get on that. That's where you're going to hear about all of the new stuff that's happening and opportunities that we will present. If you've been listening to the show for a while and you haven't left us a five-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please pause this and just leave a quick five-star review. If you'd like the show and like us to keep going, that would be fantastic. If you're listening on YouTube, click that up thumb, click the follow. Make sure you're subscribing to us everywhere. Just pause the show right now, and however you're listening to this right now, just hit the subscribe, hit the follow button if you'd like this to come in your feed in the future. All right, let's kick into the show. Rare Occasions, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
What's up?
I love that, you know, this is, we actually probably could have done this in the same room. I love that the three of you are in one room, but we're probably like two blocks from each other physically in a location. If I know my LA geography, I feel like you guys are East Side guys. Am I correct? Or where are you, like Silver Lake, Highland Park?
We're Valley guys.
You're Valley. Oh, I'm very, oh, well, don't tell anyone that. We'll have to edit that out after the fact. Okay. Well, shit. Definitely.
Be super careful because we live in two different valleys, basically, right?
Oh, yeah. We got the SGV and we got the SFV.
SGV and SV. What? What are those valleys? I feel it's San Fernando Valley and then the San Gabrielville Valley. Oh, shit. Man, I've lived in LA for 12 years and I feel like I still don't know all of the geography and the breakdowns and where everything's broken out. Yeah. So, well, I'm so happy that we were able to make this work. I mean, Jeremy, thank you for coming and saying hi the other night at the Goldfish. And look, a few days later, boom, we're on a podcast together.
Yeah, it was like the quickest podcast interview that I think we've gotten from.
I love when it works out. That was my first time at the Goldfish since it had flipped from the hi-hat. Have you guys seen it? Have you been there since the flip?
Yeah, I've been there as well. It's different, but it keeps some of its some of the same vibes that were there before.
I know you played the hi-hat before, like years back.
Yeah, yeah, we played at the hi-hat beforehand. Yeah.
It was an awkward setup, though, if I have to say. Like, I mean, it was, you know, then when you walk in, you kind of see the side of the thing. And now, I don't know, I think the layout of the Goldfish is feeling, it makes a little bit more sense. I did notice the sound booth has remained. That is the one thing that hasn't shifted. Yeah. Cool.
Definitely the bar.
And the bar, yes. Still no liquor license, but either way. beer and wine only. That's cool. Right on. Well, guys, this is a, you know, you have a really interesting story, and it's like now we're in 2023, and it's, you know, something that we've been hearing a lot about is like these TikTok success stories, and something that, you know, you are able to leverage this into not just like a viral moment, but, you know, into actually building a fan base and going on headlining tours and, you know, selling out clubs and stuff like that. And I feel a big part of the reason, that you kind of could take this moment, capitalize on it and jump is because you'd been laying the groundwork for a decade. I mean, over that. I mean, if I, you know, and it's like they say that luck is simply when preparation meets opportunity. And, you know, as I was like exploring your discography and your videos and just like everything that you've put out over the last 10 years and my favorite part of your website, the gigography or the gig, yeah. What did you call it? The gigography.
Yeah,
shit, gigography. Everybody... Go check. Is that documents every single gig you've ever played to date? Is that the thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, when we started, I was always lurking on like Led Zeppelin's website, and they have really good, like, they have documentation for all of their shows, including photos and things like that. So as we were playing shows going back to 2012, I was like, I'm going to write everything down that I felt is important. So we have like all these bands we played with, a majority of which don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Venue and, you know, the date and, yeah.
I love, oh, so you did this manually. I was like, what app is this? I need this app.
No, I did it manually.
And just recently we consolidated all of our, like, our digital storage and stuff like that, which is all connected to the same Google accounts that we have. And, like, we were like, number one priority, make sure that we don't lose our data, but number two, make sure we don't lose our gigography.
Seriously.
Switch over email accounts.
No, that is a serious concern, and I appreciate that it's there. I mean, I was going through all your past shows, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say, based on the gigography, you guys moved from Boston to LA in around 2016, and I'm going to take a guess. Let's say it looks like September 2016. How close am I?
Wow.
I think I landed in LA, or I arrived in LA October 1st. So
yeah, okay. Pretty close. It looked like you had a Middle East
It was
send
a staggered
off.
Move because we were.
Was it?
Yeah. There was. So, like, we went to college in the Boston area. Mm-hmm. And when Luke and I were the first to graduate, and Luke came out to LA, and we can get into that.
Yeah.
But basically, there was like a 2-year period where Jeremy and I kind of like kept the gigging operation going by like having friends sit in for Luke and also for our
drums, yeah.
former lead guitarist, Peter.
Okay.
So we had at the time there were 4 of us, and it was like really one by one we made it to LA, and it's kind of amazing. Like lots of Boston bands, especially when they start as college bands,
yeah,
they dissolve when they graduate. And I think part of our success is the longevity and the fact that we've been able to stick to it.
I mean as we find, you know, I was in Minneapolis prior to LA, and my wife is an artist, she's from Boston as well, and she would kind of say a similar thing, like there's a ceiling in these cities, and it's like you kind of hit your ceiling fairly quickly. I noticed that in Minneapolis, and it's kind of like the growth potential isn't quite there. And like, you know, for me at least, moving out to LA was something like I felt I had kind of done all I could do in Minneapolis, and I wanted a different challenge. I'm curious, what was the reason, the impetus for you guys coming out here?
Well, I don't think we were anywhere close to hitting Boston's ceiling.
Okay.
Part of me kind of wishes we were like still like I don't know. I'm proud of the New England roots that we have, and I'd love to be regarded like bands that I remember from the scene, like Pyle and Krill, and they're just kind of like local legends. I would have loved that for this band, but we, you know, basically our other activities took us out to LA.
Yeah, I mean, I was at Berklee for film scoring.
Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I always had it in my head that a goal was to go to LA and pursue that. And this band just kept going and going sort of on the side, and we all had like day jobs, you know, and so I just figured I'm gonna go to LA. And
he gave us a solid heads up, like you were probably a junior in college when you were like, guys, if we want to do this after college, it's got to happen in LA. And we're like, all right, we'll make it happen.
So basically they followed me out here, and they all kind of got set up with you know their daytime jobs and gigging outside of the band and all sorts of stuff, so that we could keep doing it, you know, on weekends and nights and weekends until finally we could make it up to like a full-time thing.
Yeah. I saw that you were kind of doing the LA grind gig hustle thing. I mean, I was looking at the gigography. You've played all of the clubs, the East Side, you know, clubs and kind of those indie clubs and Lost Night, RIP, and like, you know, all of it, all of the those hole in the wall spots. But how many gigs did you say that you've played before you made the move?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I think in like the around 150 range before we moved.
Hope at least a couple hundred.
Yeah.
Gigs. Yeah.
I remember our Wheaton College gig was our 100th gig, and that was with people sitting in on drums and guitar. So that was like during that transitionary phase.
Got it. And so when you came out here in 2016, so Peter didn't, your former lead guitarist, he didn't join you out here. And is that kind of, you decided we're going to continue as a trio, three piece?
He did join us.
He did.
But he eventually, a couple of years in, he left the band for personal reasons. And
got it.
We're all very supportive of him and his solo music career, but we just figured we'd continue as a three piece because it was kind of working better with a little less cooks in the kitchen, because we all like to have our hands in the creative process. So
got it.
There was a time where we were looking for a guitarist, and we played with a few guitarists in the scene, and they were awesome, but they were busy with their own projects, and we were like, well, you know, it kind of works just the three of us. So that's what
cool.
we went with.
I mean, you have and it's, you got that. I mean, there's no shortage of rock trios in the history of rock music that worked really well. And I mean, but your sound is so big and it's cohesive. And do you tour with
a hired guitar gun, or do you use tracks for your shows, or you just make the sound work? Yeah, I see the head nodding for tracks.
Yes. Okay. Yes, tracks.
our arrangement style has changed since we've become a three-piece. So like,
yeah,
doing our current music, we generally are able to do it playing live. We still use tracks for, like, I don't know, like tambourine and these little auxiliary things, strings, things like that.
Cool.
But doing some of our old songs, we throw the bass in the tracks, and Jeremy's our lead guitarist.
Ah, okay, cool. I did see in one of your videos that Jeremy was on guitar for like a split second. There's a music video. He's up there on the guitar, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Multi-instrumental.
That bass has six strings.
Yeah, right.
our last tour, we had a bit where Jeremy would go on the drums and Luke play guitar, so all three of us had a turn.
Total mind fuck. Yeah, that's great. Cool. So let's jump to end of 2021. You know, this is when shit really started to just pop on TikTok. Step me through this and just like what happened, what went down. Like, tell me this story of what happened with TikTok.
Yeah, I mentioned this to you briefly before, but yeah, that whole pop-off moment in 2021, it really was like the final pop-off to kind of get us to that wider reach. That was the big chungus that happened after years of little pockets of the internet kind of taking us under its wing. So it, you know, like I mentioned before, there's a guy named Booga who was a Fortnite champion.
Ooh.
It was like a big deal when it first happened, like 2017 or so. Okay. It turned out even before he became a champion and was on the news and whatever, that he used our music in his video. So he was an organic fan of ours, which was cool.
Cool.
But then when he won, all of his supporters and underlings saw his channel and were like, oh, if I use Rare Occasions music in my Fortnite montage videos, I'll be good at Fortnite. And so we suddenly had this sea of people with almost no effort of our own. Again, with like the opportunity luck analogy, it just happened that people caught on, and that kind of shifted into different aspects of the gaming industry, and then that shifted into like the art community, drawing, anime, so on and so forth. And these shifts were slow. Like, it was Fortnite for a year, two years,
2020, yeah.
And then that started, you know, cycling, and then eventually the art and anime community on TikTok in the summer of 2021 got its clutches on our song Notion, which was a song that had been used and was part of that cyclical nature. But once TikTok got it, it was a night and day thing.
Well, that's so interesting. So 2017, around that time, this Fortnite star Booga, he's using your music in, what is this, Twitch or is YouTube then, I guess, at the time, right?
YouTube.
Yeah. at the time.
And so when you were playing shows around, you know, 2017, 18, 19, I guess, pre-pandemic, were you noticing people at the shows that were in the gaming community that kind of discovered you that way, or was it not really translating?
At that time, I would say it wasn't really translating. Yeah. But we did see like the online numbers, the streaming on our Spotify and things like that, slowly ticking up. Yeah. So it was like discouraging to have been at it for such a long time and not really see, you know, people coming out to shows as much and things like that. But at the same time, we're seeing online things picking up, and it's like, let's just keep at it and let's just keep going. And
we kind of assumed it was because of their ages too. Like,
oh yeah.
Cause it was frustrating, like seeing the numbers there online, but no one coming to the shows. And it's like, well, cause they're kids, like they can't go to these.
You're playing 21 plus clubs. Yeah.
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 So that was part of it. But then, you know, it just, we just kept at it, and eventually it got big enough that.
So when you say, you know, Jeremy, you're mentioning the art and drawing and anime community kind of latched on. What does that actually mean? Like, what, for people that don't really understand that these are communities, what does that mean?
So people, you know, be it Fortnite players, video gamers, drawers, painters, folks that do animation, they like to either like make montages of their performance of something. Uh-huh. Or like a behind the scenes of the creation of something. You know, I think anyone who's ever watched a movie knows that music matters, and they like to put music to the background of the video just to like give the impression from like the song kind of like sets the tone of what they want the people watching the video to feel, or I think like to perceive the thing that they're drawing. Like, like, for example, Notion, it has this dramatic strings intro. That Notion is the song that really got taken under TikTok's wing. Mm-hmm. It has this dramatic strings intro, and then it kind of goes into this like little vocal solo for a split second, then goes into the song. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that dichotomy between orchestral strings going into a more modern rock sound, people would use the string section to kind of like set up the tone of like the animation of a video.
Gotcha.
And then when Brian would start singing in the song, it was kind of like the punchline or the reveal of what it is that the point of the video was about. That's a very specific circumstance, but
when we
set the tone of the video kind of.
Yeah.
When we started seeing that, that's like people were sort of memeifying the song. So they would like, yeah, whether it's like a comedy video with like a setup and a punchline, or really any sort of format, having like 8 seconds of this very distinct orchestral sound and then 8 seconds of a dark kind of indie rock sound, people would use that to describe the emotions that they're trying to convey in their videos. So yeah, once we saw it sort of become a meme, that's when the virality just kind of skyrocketed. And that was sort of after the artistic community. Sure.
So that was, you know, what they call on TikTok, the trend. And this was the trend. And the trend was using this sound, like your song. And I guess they were using it from the very beginning. So that transition moment, which is so key on TikTok, that is something that is so many trends revolve around, is that big transition moment, is like, you know, the A to the B.
The payoff.
And so what was... like, when did you notice something was taking off? I couldn't find the original video that made this happen, if there is an original. Like,
we don't know, like, I don't think there's just one video that did it. But, like, some of the earlier ones, I remember there was, like, this Sonic the Hedgehog meme thing. That was, like, the first one that I saw that had over 1 million views. But it all, there was just, like, an onslaught, like, kind of overnight, of suddenly everybody's using our song as a sound in their video. And
wow,
once that like momentum picks up, like the creators know to use the sound because it like helps their video get seen. So once, I don't know, once you're at that point with your song, like I don't know,
it's snowballs. Like,
yeah, yeah, snowballs, exactly.
Yeah, it's a trending song, and right, because I was just seeing, you know, there's 100, to my count, there's around 160,000 videos that use Notion, at least that have been tagged to, that have been synced up to the original, or to the song that's credited to you. There might be other, you know, videos that the TikTok hasn't credited to, you know, to the rare occasions Notion, but... and it, maybe there's more. How many did you count at the time? Was there more?
There was, well, yeah, I would say the most of the trending sounds were not the
official
Notion audio. It was like original audio, some other thing. I don't even know.
Sped up.
Oh, yeah, the sped up,
slowed down and reverbed.
Yeah.
Like all these other things that people created.
But luckily, like because of the audio ID, like we still get credit for that stuff, but it doesn't like link to Oh, it does link to our song eventually, but you have to like click a few things to get there.
Got it. Anyway, got it. Like contains music from, they put that little badge on there. Okay.
And like,
got it.
As this was first happening, we weren't really on TikTok. Like we had just made an account because our manager's like, I think it'd be a good idea for you to make a TikTok account. So we're like, okay, fine. And so we weren't like checking it or like we didn't understand any of this stuff at that time either.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even know what a sound was and I don't know, all the terminology. But we noticed, because we were looking at our like streaming data, the Spotify for Artists app, like just overnight it jumped up from, I think Notion was getting like, I don't know, 10 or 15,000 streams a day, and it jumped up to like 80,000 in one day. And we're like,
wow.
Either this, I thought the app was broken. I was like, we'll check tomorrow and I'm sure it'll be a normal number.
Yeah.
And then it just kept going up and we're like, what's going on? It took us about, I think, 2 or 3 days to like figure out the source.
I remember the day, I think it hit like 156,000 streams a day. And that was like a 6-digit number.
Yeah.
Of one song in one day. And that
in
was
one day.
Like, wow. And then that's insane. Saw that, and then I had to go teach. And it was just like, what? It's like a whole other bag, a whole different discussion of like record label negotiations while trying to maintain a normal life. Oh my
God. So let's talk about that. So how I you know, we all hear the stories of the new A&R at major labels are, you know, 22-year-old kids, and they're the like senior A&R at Capitol Records is this 22-year-old kid, because that's like, you know, that's how labels are finding artists these days.
They're all senior VPs. It's amazing. Yeah, how many senior VPs can there be? But
seriously,
I mean, like most of the people that reached out to us, so like that first week where it jumped to like around 100,000 streams, we were like, oh, this is cool, but we didn't hear from the labels. And then when it jumped up again to like 400,000 streams per day, suddenly like in our inbox, like every single major label was like trying to book meetings with us.
They were all just in lockstep.
And they're in lockstep. Yeah. those A&R guys, every single one used the word lockstep.
Buzzwords.
Yeah.
Really?
That's our inside joke.
We're going to work with you in lockstep to make in this lockstep. The best it can be.
I had never heard that word before in my life. And then I heard it 1,000 times before like and a half in the fall of 2021.
So what were those pitches like? What were they? Were they sliding into your DMs and just saying, let's work in lockstep, boys?
Pretty much.
Some of them were only Insta DMs, which is crazy to me. And then a lot of them emailed us because we do have our email listed on our site.
22-year-olds don't know how to email, so that makes a lot of sense that they found
it. Mean, most of these slid into your DMs. No situation.
Most of these A&R folks that were reaching out were, I would say, like in their 30s.
Okay.
But the interesting thing that we learned, and I don't know, you probably know about this too, is like the majors all have these like software tools that they use to like monitor TikTok. Mm-hmm. So one guy I remember meeting was sort of a data nerd, and I actually love that guy because I don't know, I'm kind of a nerd too. But yeah, so there's like the A&R strategy is like data collection and monitoring TikTok and what's going on there. And if it passes a certain threshold, it's like, all right, let's call them up.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, you know, a lot of the labels really have employed the data analysts, and that is what the new A&R is. It's no longer going down, you know, going to the Viper room or the whiskey and just like scouting out talent and seeing, oh my God, they're good, let's sign them. You know, no, it's all about the data. It's just like they need something happening. You know, they're not in the artist development game anymore. Major labels don't develop artists. They want to take something that's already happening and throw gasoline on the fire. So let's talk about that. What were these conversations that were happening? What were the, how does that go from them either sliding into your DMs or shooting you an email to like, let's set up a meeting? How many, you said all the major labels are hitting you up. Were you taking meetings with all of them? Were they sending you contracts, like sign here? What was going on?
I think there were like all in all, even after we signed, we were still getting messages. I think it might have been like 14 or 15 labels.
Wow. all majors
contacted a,
There was one independent that reached out.
So so they reach out, they find you, you know, all these major labels all these major labels are reaching out. And then what happens after that? I'm so curious about like the day to day, the minute by minute. So Jeremy's in lessons teaching kids how to play the bass. What were you? And then like you all are working your day jobs. What are your day? What is happening at this time while they're like, you know, pounding down your door trying to get you to sign?
Yeah, I was working as a electrical engineer at that time too.
Okay.
So I was like full time in an office mostly. Mm-hmm. This was also like during the part of pandemic where lockdown was, people weren't locked down necessarily, but most people were still working from home.
Sure.
So almost all these were Zoom meetings, even with people who were here locally in LA.
Yeah.
So it made it a little bit easier for us to balance. But I remember I was just constantly sneaking off into the laboratory that I worked in a dark, quiet area and taking these Zoom calls with like these various, record execs or, you know, marketing teams. Yeah, I would say like most meetings went this way. We met with the A&R first.
Okay.
And then if, it went well, we would meet with other team members like the marketing and they're really kind of pitching us on their team. Mm-hmm. So it was cool, but it was also interesting how similar all these different labels, the pitches were almost word for word, the same.
Pretty much down, word like for
down,
word,
down to the contract. It
was, what were these pitches? And we'll get to the contract in a second, but I'm curious what these pitches were.
Yeah. At first, it was just like it was a lot of recognition that rock isn't dead, and
oh yeah,
you guys can be the ones to bring it back to the forefront.
Okay.
That was a big part of it. And I think there was an aspect of us that we were so desperate to not just be basically used for just this one song that when people said it, it was kind of like, wow, they think that we can take rock back.
Yeah.
Not we take it back, but like we help propel it.
Yeah.
Back into the public
to like a new generation, because a lot of kids were doing covers and like they picked up a guitar for the first time and they were learning.
We were
song.
Getting messages from kids that were like, "Hey, the song Notion by the Rare Occasions. What genre of music is this called?"
Dude, like, that's the third on Google. When you search the Rare Occasions on Google, it's like what people also search for. People also ask. It's what genre is Rare Occasions? I saw there's like the people also ask, we have where are the Rare Occasions from? What genre is Rare Occasions? What was the Rare Occasions first song? Are the Rare Occasions Australian?
Oh, man.
A lot of people wondering about that.
Wow, that's funny. But yeah, no, people didn't know what to call it. We had to like educate them in the comment section. This is called rock. This is called guitar.
Oh my god!
And they're asking us about like making beats. That, like, oh, I like the beat you made. And
this is a
different generation.
It was so weird because it's like, oh my god, these kids don't know what rock is. But then it's also like, think about the first time you ever went to a rock concert or heard rock for the first time and how impactful it was. It's like it's cool to kind of be a part of that, you know, that coming of age.
If we can be the
musician or music fan, like that's really cool, but it was just weird.
Yeah.
That was happening.
If we can be the gateway for kids to like get super into the stuff that we grew up on, I mean, the new generation of that, then that's pretty cool.
So the labels really kind of picked up on our excitement for that, and they were using that to sell us.
Yeah.
And it was like, let's introduce you to this person from this other team. We'll set up another meeting in a couple days and we'll talk about this aspect of it and blah, blah, blah. So it was multiple meetings with multiple labels, and it was.
Yeah. And we, part of that was our own scrutiny, because we knew going into it, we've been in and around the music business for a long time. And we knew like, if we're going to sign a deal on something that we created and give up a portion of that, of the, you know, of our hard work, we want to make sure we're scrutinizing the people who are going to be on their team and are going to be people that we want to work with. And also the pretext was like, this is going to be our team going forward, like for future releases and sure. you know, the future of the band potentially. And that's, potentially. That's sort of, I don't know, another thing to talk about, but, yeah.
So what were these deals that were being offered to you? So let's say all these meetings went well, you met all the various people and it gets time to deal time. You're like, all right, let's see what you got. You know, what were the deals that, that were being handed to you? Give me the boilerplate.
Basically, it was a licensing deal that, so not like stripping the copyright or anything. It was just the, mm-hmm. the option to take the song and push it to as many avenues as possible.
So they wouldn't own the masters. When you say licensing, they're yeah. just participating in kind of the royalty share of the song, and they have the right to license the song for various opportunities, whether that's sync or streaming, frankly, and then they can, you know, earn a percentage of the royalties, but not own the masters. So you still have full control. You maintain ownership. They're just participating in the royalty share. Is that right?
For a period of time, yeah.
Yeah. For okay. It's kind of hard though. To it would be awesome if it was that simple. But okay. It's like, yeah, we still own the publishing rights to the song, but they have the sync because they have licensing ownership of the song. Mm-hmm. It's also sync and publishing are kind of tied together, and they're kind of tied together in a way. So it's like it still is a little tug and pull in terms of what we have and what they have. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was warned to us, is like nothing is just split in the middle. Nothing is, because of things like royalty structures and how the business is built. Mm-hmm. For better or for worse, nothing is on the surface as it seems. There's always that extra layer that we had to be cautious about, which we learned very quickly what those different caveats were.
I would say on the sync publishing side, because we're songwriters, we mm-hmm. in terms of the royalties and stuff, we get to keep everything. It's yeah. more so about the control. And like everything having to do with this song that we have a deal with, we have mm-hmm. to make sure like, does this align with what we signed in the contract? You know, we're not going against anything and it's all kosher. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's just, it's a shared responsibility of the song. And on the, I don't know, master recording side, mm-hmm. the royalties are shared.
And what were the percentages that they were offering the various, you're saying most of these deals were similar. What was the breakdown? Was this a 50-50 split? Was this an 85-15, like a traditional deal?
A number that is held tightly between Elektra Records and the Rare Occasions representing parties, unfortunately.
You're throwing the fucking NDA at me right now. No.
We can't talk about our particular deal. However, sure. most of these licensing deals,
that's right,
have a certain split, and that's what we saw as well. And it's pretty widely available, you know, what that split is. I don't know if we can say the number.
So let's not talk about the Elektra deal because you're signed to NDA with that, but let's talk about all the other deals that you are being offered that you're not bound to an NDA with. What were those? What was that split that you were seeing?
I think we were working with a lawyer kind of going back and forth, and they had never seen a 50-50 offer before.
Okay.
That much in favor of an artist, let's say. So it was along those lines, perhaps.
Yeah.
So they were saying, this is surprising to me as an attorney. I haven't negotiated major label deals in the past that were 50-50. The fact that you're being offered these 50-50 licensing deals, that is something that is new and interesting and favorable to you, right? Real quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space, and let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder. And yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative. And they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Tulos is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with Sound Exchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue, they have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out Tulost. You can just go to tulost.com, use the promo code Ari's Take for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think.
Yeah, and it kind of, especially for our circumstance, that if we were to sign a deal that matches those numbers, it makes sense because we released the song 6 years prior to all of this explosivity that had happened. So in what sane world would we have relinquished 80% of our 6 years of hard work,
right,
of a song that we, you know, to its limits, that we got to where it got to. Of course, the internet does what the internet wants to, and we have to give credit to that, but it happened under our control of the song, and we were able to shift our fan base or these listeners of this one song or watchers of videos that happen to have this one song. We were already putting in the work to shift people towards our catalog to try to translate those video watchers into long-term fans. So it would have been crazy to give up such a large piece of the pie for a song that came out when TikTok didn't even exist. I have had people like come up to me straight in my face and say, Jeremy, you can be honest, what did you do to get your song to blow up on TikTok? And like, I don't know, like we didn't have a master plan when we released the song 5 years before it blew up on TikTok. It just happened. And obviously we're grateful for it, but there's nothing that we could have done to propel it to the degree that it did. So
because the label, there was no label involved in the creation of the song. So the leverage that we have, it's like we have a hit song on our hands. The amount of leverage that a band in that situation has is vastly different from a band who's just starting out and like wants to record their first song and the label pays for it. Like it's a totally different kind of split. And we knew that going in, and we knew also, you know, there's no matter what, you're giving something up. So it was sort of like, let's try this out. And that's what we did.
Yeah. So, I mean, that I don't want to gloss over that. This song was released in 2016. that's incredible. Like, we're seeing this happen a lot. I mean, similarly, another indie rock artist that blew up on TikTok right around the same time I also had on the show, Ricky Montgomery. He had a couple songs blow up. Similarly, you know, for better or worse, whatever his NDA was, he broke it. He told me the whole deal on the show of what he said with Warner Records.
He's cooler than us.
Yeah, no. You guys are great. But yeah, he, you know, similarly, it was a 50-50 deal and it was a licensing thing. And I'm sure he had the same meetings with the same people that you guys did because it was the same time period, to be honest. But it was for his record that came out in 2016. Similarly, I don't know what that, you know, yeah, magic of the year of the recording that year, whole, but like,
yeah, mid 2010 seems to be the trend amongst the trends.
Mm.
Like bands that people should check out that fall under the same category as us with,
yeah,
songs that came out in a similar time. Vundabar, The Walters,
Vacations,
Lovejoy, right? Hot Freaks, who we were just on our headline tour with. They were our opening act for a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of scenario. It was a song from 2013, right?
Yeah, it's an older
song. And they signed to Elektra, just like us. And so this story is like, it does not begin and it doesn't end with our song. And like you're saying, Ricky Montgomery, I've heard those songs before.
Yeah.
It's crazy that, like, we were such different people and musicians when that song came out.
I think
five, 6 years ago.
The kids were on a real nostalgia kick at the end of 2021 because that's when the world was kind of opening up. And I think people were excited for, like, that guitar, like, live, more live music sound, because people want to get out and go to shows and jump around, and had all this pent up energy. So during that time period, yeah, it's interesting, like, a lot of our peers that we played shows with in, like, house shows with in Boston, like, they were in the same boat as us.
It's crazy. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Just kind of where we were at as a society and a culture around that time period, and why people are so taken to this, I guess, you know, indie rock sound of the mid 2010s, the aughts, or whatever we call it. But so I want to get back to this deal, because they just signed, correct me if I'm wrong, is just a single deal, right? Or was it a full EP album option? What was the
A lot of these deals have an option.
Okay.
And everyone that we saw had an option. Let's put it that way.
And so
for like a short EP.
Got it. So it starts with a single. It's like, all right, we want to sign this. It's we're signing one single firm, and then the option is of course always on the label to decide if we want to do an EP as well. What was that gonna look like? Because I just saw that you released your record, your new record, Attaboy, or your new EP, and at least according to Spotify, it's self-released. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And then we know other bands who followed through with it.
Yeah. This other band at our same rehearsal spot, they got the option. We didn't get the option, and in some ways, like, I'm kind of glad we got to continue independently. But when we first went into it, like, the whole reason we were enticed by these deals, knowing kind of the drawbacks of the major label system, is like, well, maybe this could be our way into the door. And so the option was like that carrot that's dangling above our heads, because we wanted to have releases, like, and
long term. We're looking for a long term relationship.
Yeah. So we were a little bit disappointed that didn't happen, but our A&R person was very transparent about that possibility throughout the whole process. So it's not like it was a surprise, like they didn't trick us or anything. But we were, the reason we signed was for, you know, future releases.
Get support from them in the future, not just to work this one song, but to build the name
What was it going to take for them to exercise the option? I mean, Notion has currently over 300 million streams. Yeah. You have 5 million monthly listeners on Spotify alone. What does it take these days? What was the transparency of this A&R rep that you're saying that made sense why they didn't want to exercise the option? I'm curious what it takes these days.
As far as we knew up front, it was based on the performance of Notion. If it hit a certain metric, basically streams converted into units, like the traditional album sale. I think it, what is it?
1,500 streams to 1,500 equals an album.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think they have different ratings for
singles. It's 150 for single.
150 for single.
Single, that makes sense. Yeah.
So, so it had to hit a certain metric, and within our term with Elektra, it wiped the floor with that metric.
That was the base level requirement, though. That wasn't like they could still decide yes or no. Mm-hmm. It was fully in their court.
It was in their control the whole time. So then it was kind of just like, well, did they have the intention?
I have one anecdote, and so the A&R world, not just our A&R guy, but all the people we talked to. They kept using this terminology about upward trajectory and downward trajectory. Mm-hmm. And it sounds very fancy, but it's literally like, is the stream graph going up or is it going down? And everybody, we found that during our term, the enthusiasm and like investment in promoting our music was also related to this idea of upward trajectory and downward trajectory. And we kind of lucked out because our song had a second wind like during our term. So we actually got a lot of good things out of it. But then by the time it was decision time on the label side, we were experiencing some downward trajectory and that wasn't what they wanted to see. So
I'm assuming, so talk to me about the advances that in these offers that you are getting, because that's another reason. I mean, honestly, probably one of the biggest reasons that a lot of artists, decide to go with one label over another. What were these advances looking like?
We can't give a number.
And it's weird because we didn't have any costs related to the song. I mean, it was recorded and released.
Yeah, so it's weird to call it an advance because the song was made 6 years ago.
A bribe.
But that's how it's scheduled. It's structured.
It's like
an
advance stream.
But yeah, it's money that they give you up front to be recouped later on your percentage of royalty. So like, are we talking like six figures, seven figures? What's the range?
Six figures.
Okay.
And, you know, going into that situation, we were already seeing the money come in from our own distribution on the song, and we're looking at the income and we're like, it does, like, if you're just thinking about money, like the advance was not enticing really. No. Because it's like, we were talking like, can't we just have no advance so we can start getting royalties right away? And that's like not something that people normally do, and our lawyer was like, well, you're gonna want
it in their interest to keep the artist under, like, so they can put, they have something to maintain that relationship while they have something to benefit from.
Well, they have skin in the game. Like, if they throw, you know, $400,000 out the window, or if they pay you, I'm just throwing this number out, I don't know what you, so six figures, let's just say it was, you know, 400 grand or whatever, that's you know what they pay you, that's now not theirs anymore, that's gone. So now it's to their incentive to make that money back, whereas if they didn't pay you any advance and you're just like, let's just make some money, they don't have any skin in the game, and they could actually drop it tomorrow because they're like, well, we don't have to make any money back here because we no money went out the door. So it's actually to every artist's benefit to take as big of an advance as possible, just because then the label has a little bit more incentive to try to make some of that money back.
That's a fair point.
That's basically exactly what our lawyer convinced us of. And yeah, so we ended up trying to get as big an advance as we could.
We kind of did the math and was like, at the rate that it's streaming, how long is it going to take us to make the money back?
And it would be like
our decision making.
shorter than the recording term. So it's like,
yeah,
what? Yeah.
Yeah. Like Brian said, based on just money.
Yeah.
It was not particularly in our favor, but you have to think about the fact that we've been doing this for 10 years. We had to, in amongst all this stress, had to remember, that we've been doing this for 10 years and there's more value to the song and to our name than just money.
Absolutely. Yeah. How long was this term for the song that where they have the rights to license it? Because it's not ownership. You know, a lot of traditional major label deals is they own the masters in perpetuity, i.e. forever, and then you never get it back. But this is a licensing deal with an end date. How long was this term? When's the end date?
Just to put a scale to it. So there's like the recording term, like where they're actively working on promoting the song and like racking up expenses too that are recoupable. But then that was on the scale of months. Okay. And then the license term, which we're still in, is many years.
Less than a decade, but not an insignificant amount of time.
Sure. And they're just earning 50% on the royalties from the one song for that term under a decade of what it is, right?
We also, during the recording term, made a few alternate versions. So there's three tracks and a live video, which they're collecting on.
Got it.
All for that one song, yeah.
Yeah, but I did notice the music video for this song was released, what, years ago?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, man.
2017.
We did it with one of my good friends from the Boston music scene. And at the time, like, we were an up-and-coming band. He was an up-and-coming film guy. And it was really his first, like, big music video, I think. And I've talked to him about it since then. And he's like, oh, I could do so much better. I could make, you know. And we kind of feel that way as well. Like, we wish we had a different visual to go with the song. And that was one of the things we were talking about with the labels. They were trying to decide how to allocate the resources, and they're like, oh, maybe we could do a new music video for it. And we were all like, yeah, that would be great. But they were like, well, it already has a music video and it's doing fine. So we ended up doing a live performance video that they paid for, and we split the costs and the income.
Yeah, I mean, the music video, it's a concept. High art, high concept, conceptual piece. Are you guys even in it?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. I was like, yeah.
Our parents
are in it, but...
Okay.
we bought pizza for one of the music video shoots from L.A. when it was being shot in Boston. But that was about as much of the shooting process as we were a part of.
Got it.
Was buying pizza for all of the fans in the cult at the end of the music video.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. That's great. Cool. So this deal, which this, you know, you guys got signed and dropped by a major label within the span of what? A year? 2 years?
6 months.
I mean, 6 months.
8 months.
Okay. But it's so interesting because it's like, I mean, but you got dropped from a label and then you're able to go on a headlining tour and play, I think it was like 250 cap rooms all over the country. And they look like, I mean, talk about this tour. How did the tour go this last fall?
It was the real reward of this whole thing.
Okay.
It was exactly what we said in like 2019, 2018, when we had internet recognition, but it wasn't, people weren't, or like, we would get playlists here and there on Spotify, but people aren't paying money to experience us specifically.
Mm-hmm.
They have a subscription that allows them to experience us. But it's a different story trying to convince people to spend a month's worth of Spotify money to buy a ticket for one night to see specifically you. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing where we noticed a big, big shift. We sold out our Santa Ana show within
like 2 weeks,
of announcing the tour, and that was a 300 cap room, and that was like it was the Constellation room, I think, at the Observatory.
Great room, yeah.
And that was awesome. Just being able to sell out cities that we have either played before, and didn't have a good turnout in the past, but then we're selling out shows or selling out cities that we just straight up have never been to. That is a new thing, to be able to reach far and wide and be able to, with relative confidence, to be able to have people show up. There's a line outside the venue. People are singing along.
Yeah.
And we got a healthy dose of mosh pits throughout. Which was like, that's brand new. And that's freaking awesome. That's the live experience, the human interaction, that in spite of all these graphs and, you know, there's money to be made and all those cool things, to not forget that, like, music is about interacting with people and having a message that engages and resonates with people.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the proof in the pudding that, like, we're doing it right. Like, we're doing something good. If the things were happening the way they were, it was awesome, man. Yeah.
When we started this band, you know, our music is a little bit eclectic and never like set out to be super commercial. So like kind of the like loftiest ambitions we had, like I remember going to see concerts at local clubs, and like, I don't know, Tokyo Police Club was playing in Boston at a room at about that capacity. I'm like, that's the dream. Like, that's what we want to do. And the fact that we're like at that point now is like kind of crazy to me. it's a great opportunity. Like I'm so thankful for where we got, because like I never dreamed that the Rare Occasions would be at that level even. Yeah. So it's crazy.
That's so awesome. So releasing, first off, congratulations on a successful tour. That's incredible. That's awesome. I mean, that's something to really cherish and relish in, based on your hard work. And you know, like the thing is why you're going to be able to build on this, and you already have been building on it, is because it's that when, you know, preparation meets opportunity kind of a thing. It's like you guys could capitalize on this moment, and, you know, I haven't seen you in a club live, but I've watched your live videos, and clearly you can bring it live, and that why there's, you know, dance pits, mosh pits, whatever, that's because you're bringing that energy live, and people want to, you know, are feeling it, and then that energy is in the room, that because you've played hundreds of shows before this moment and really, you know, laid that groundwork. So talk about now releasing this EP, Attaboy. You released in November of 2022, just a few months back, and how that experience was, you know, now having a TikTok following, you know, you have 170,000, something like that, 80,000 followers on TikTok, using all the, like, the platforms at your disposal, now needing to think through what the release strategy was for this record, which sounds great, by the way. It's a brilliantly it's like it's your most mature work by far. The mix is pristine. It really hits super hard. I'm curious, who produced this?
We worked with an engineer, and he ended up mixing it too. This guy, Ara, how do you say his last name?
I don't want to mispronounce. Sarkisian.
He works. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, he mixes a bunch of people. He's
yeah. Awesome. So we only tracked drums and bass in studio, and then because we've been self-producing our stuff, most of our stuff, not all of it, but most of it up until that point. So
yeah,
I don't know. I would say it's still a self-produce. Like we lay down all the tracks, kind of like knowing how to arrange it and stuff. Luke arranged this or orchestrated the strings that you hear on the last song.
Nice.
But Ara was a huge component to it as well, and making it sound really pro.
I think having Brian has done a good job of mixing our previous work, but I think we just wanted to, especially because we, it was like a creative decision, but it was also a logistical decision because we were like, okay, we got to send off this EP to get mixed and mastered, but also we got to get ready for this tour.
Yeah.
Being able to get ready for tour and mix an entire EP, I don't think that would have happened.
It was nice to have somebody else
to send
it
off. But what it did force us to do was understand the difference between mixing and producing. Mm-hmm. And like it forced us to really put on, like, before we send that email, like decisions have to be made whether it or not it's like in the audio or if it's like we're giving directions to the mix engineer.
Like, are we printing this reverb or are we asking for it,
like,
from
very
the mix?
Technical stuff,
right?
But all of that goes into the artistry and the way like the sonics come out.
Yeah, if you're going to self-mix it, you can leave everything in there, enabled or disabled or anything like that in every track. But if you're sending it to a mixing engineer, you want to mute virtually everything that you don't want in there, and you have to do all of your own edits beforehand, whereas like that can be at any point in the process. And so I'm assuming that maybe was a little bit of a different workflow for you.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was a good thing for us though, because self-producing, the songwriting, mm-hmm. production and mixing all kind of like blend together.
Yeah.
And I think having like clean breaks between those three stages, mm-hmm. Helped us be a little bit more intentional about what we're doing. So I think going forward, now that we can afford it, we'll probably, I'll never mix another Rare Occasions.
your mix sounds great. Don't worry, Brian. It's your mixes have sounded great. But Ara did an amazing job on this one. I think it is super pro. It does sound like a step forward. And it is it's a much deeper, wider, more expansive sounding record than you've had in the past. And it's but the ethos is still there, the energy is still there. You've maintained, you know, it sounds like the Rare Occasions. It's just a bit bigger. I think it packs a little bit bigger punch. And Luke, I love that you're, you know, using your orchestral scoring arrangement training in all of it. And I love the video that you made on TikTok about, well, Notion's opening. Everybody thought that it was like a Disney sample or something. And you're like, it's not a sample, believe it or not. We know how to make this shit on the
Yeah.
We don't have the money to get a sample from Disney. Even if
right. No one has that money.
It's cheaper to hire an orchestra and orchestra.
Yeah, seriously.
Make a new song than try to get the license from Disney.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a great, that video was so well made because you like showed how you made it and like, you know, really quickly, but also, you know, and that's cool to show the process a little bit. And, you know, you guys have, even though you weren't on TikTok, essentially, by the time your songs were kind of popping off, you've really, and that you've been around for so long and you're not, you know, teenagers, you're not, you know, just, you know, like social media natives, TikTok natives necessarily, you've really understood what resonates on the platform and are kind of, you know, telling stories that are in line with who you are as a band. And just kind of jumping on where, you know, responding to people's questions and helping people understand. So when it came to like album promotion for this or EP promotion for Attaboy, what was the approach?
We knew that there was like, we felt this intense pressure to follow something up as quickly as possible because we didn't want to just leave people hanging, you know?
Yeah.
And we were, because we were not sure whether or not we were moving forward with the label, we were kind of blocked a little bit from releasing anything until after that term was up.
Sure.
So the good thing is we put a lot of work in to like be ready to hit the studio. As soon as we found out, we're like, okay, like we're getting this out as quickly as possible.
Nice.
And part of that strategy was focusing on like a staggered single release, just out of necessity, because if, you know, it takes a long time to compile six songs that you can get behind. And so if we just had to like put something out as quickly as possible. So we focused on the song Seasick,
yeah,
because it was the furthest along, and we felt pretty strongly about it, and we were able to get that out, I think, in June. And when it comes to the promoting, the promotion, and especially the social media, we got to give our hats off to our manager, who kind of like, first of all, explained to us the importance of all this stuff. I mean, all it was so foreign to us, and she's really like, she's got her finger on the pulse, and she kind of knows what we need to do. And not only that, but helped us with all the labor intensive like editing videos, and it takes a lot of work to make a video every day. So we gotta shout out our manager.
What's her name?
Ariana Soto.
By Ari for short.
Hey, love it.
I always think that she's like a middle-aged Israeli man.
Right. Amazing.
Yeah.
How long have you been working with her? Was this a recent thing, or?
She's been in our crew since college.
She's in the band.
Yeah.
Amazing.
She's in the band.
Incredible.
Yeah, when we were in college in like 2013, we were like one of her case studies for a class. She also went to Berkeley, where Luke and I went.
Wow.
So we were like a case study, or like a, like to get her foot in the door of what it's like to manage a band. And it's just, it was
awesome.
Good experience.
And the other thing I will say is, one of the perks of our record deal was they had us take a class about how to make TikTok videos. So this company called PushTok, it's like a third party company that works with different labels. And this instructor, Rohan, kind of like showed us like some tricks how to get the algorithm to push your video more. And that was like super helpful as well.
Wow. That's the stuff behind the scenes that happening at major labels that we don't always hear about too frequently. I'm going to have to look into PushTok unless they, I don't know, only work with labels, but that's pretty cool. So nice. And so what's next? What's coming? You released this EP just a couple months ago. You finished off a massive nationwide tour. You know, we're talking right now, end of January 2023. What's the rest of the year looking like for you?
We got to sleep in our own beds for the last couple of weeks.
Hallelujah. Mazel tov.
Good stuff.
After tour. That's pretty awesome. And like I mentioned to you before, we had a very, very long, like 10-hour meeting on Saturday. Like, all right, 2022 was just like on fire. Like, we couldn't get a breath. Now that like we've accomplished an EP and a headlining tour, like what's next? We finally got to catch up with ourselves.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's just music, new music, just writing and auditioning new tunes and seeing what sticks.
And kind of in the meantime, we're still like promoting Attaboy, because we did two singles leading up to it. Mm-hmm. Attaboy was our last EP. Mm-hmm. We'll probably like do some live videos, some live sessions. We got some footage from our tour, and then maybe like music videos, lyric videos, stuff that we can just stay on people's radar with the music that we worked so hard on last year.
Yeah.
So that while we're working on our music for this year, there's still like stuff going on outside of our internal battle.
Yeah, cool.
So full steam ahead as an indie band, basically.
Hell yeah. Well, I love it. Well, guys, this has been amazing. I really appreciate you being so open and transparent and candid with me, you know, coming on to this, and I'm glad we were able to make this work. It's such an interesting but also seemingly common story of, you know, the TikTok era in the music industry right now of what's happening. But I think what is the most inspiring part of all of this is that, you know, it's no longer when you sign to a major label that you're you're handing over your entire career to them like you would previously, prior to this era that you're in, it's just almost like a temporary partner that you work with. And there's going to be many temporary partners over the span of your career. And it's just like a moment in time. And, you know, it was a partner for this moment, and that's fine. But you, you know, you're trucking ahead, and you know, you're growing, and everything is building for you. And it seems like you're in a stronger place now, you know, than you were even 2 years ago. And it's just like it continues to grow, which is great. And I'm excited to see where you go from here and the new music that you're working on and the new shows that you're playing, the new tours. And I'll definitely be out to the next LA show that you play in town.
Yep.
Awesome. Amazing. Thank you. And thank you for helping us get, you know, our story out there and just like hopefully help other indie artists, you know, because we've sort of emerged from this unscathed and with the knowledge and the experience of how it went. And if we can help other people who it might be happening to, because it is more increasingly common.
And that knowledge, a good bit of it came from you as well. So that helped us make some good decisions and some wise choices, rather than just giving 90% of our master recording rights.
That royalty chart is like has been our blueprint.
When I like think like we just found out about neighboring rights in the recent year, and I was like, all right, where does that go?
I love it. I love that. We'll link to that chart in the show notes so people can download it. It's also, I put that chart in the new edition of the book, which just came out last week.
It just sold out on Amazon.
Hell, but Barnes & Noble still has them. And so the local bookstore has still got them. And I think Amazon's getting them back in stock soon. But anyways, guys, I have one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show. And what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
Probably different for all of us.
Okay.
Go around the horn, Brian.
Approach to this question. I think, like, from a creative standpoint, I am feeling super grateful that, like, people know our music and get it stuck in their heads and sing along at concerts. Like, the fact that I'm making a human connection, that's the artistic goal always. And from a business point of view, I also feel very privileged that I'm able to do this full time, and I can kind of put all my effort towards the craft as opposed to doing other things to pay the bills. And then this is like, you know, I had very many late nights for many years just to keep writing and keep this thing going. So I'm glad that I can work on this during the day now.
Love it. I think, Jeremy,
In 2023, you can't be good at just one thing. You have to know how to be nimble and to pivot. And that doesn't mean you can't invest yourself in something, but you have to keep your finger on the pulse to, for lack of a better term, stay relevant and to keep up. Because, man, you go online and 6-year-old kids are cutting records on GarageBand right now. Like the competition is real, to stay relevant and to create something new. And you don't need a record deal. You don't need $1 million to, go to Sunset Studios anymore. You can record your hit record. Kendrick Lamar always comes to mind. I think Humble was recorded on an iPhone. Like
the producer was like, like 19 or something, and he recorded, on an iPhone. Crazy. It's crazy.
So, anyways, there should be no, like, there are so many resources available now, and ultimately, I think the limitation of your creativity is really what you allow to pass through, and also like part of being nimble is understanding the business and knowing how to empower yourself amongst your artistry, but also knowing when your business hat is on and when your artist hat is on, and never making artistic decisions for the sake of the business. Of course, the artistry needs to benefit the business and vice versa, but there also needs to be an intention on where your decisions are coming from. So
nice. Luke.
I think I would probably just echo Brian in the sense that, like, artists are constantly moving the finish line for themselves. So you're never really reaching your goals because you're setting new goals. And it's important to look back on your first earliest realistic goals from when you were starting out and realize how many you actually met. And in that sense, I think we've made it many times over.
I love it. I love it. Brian, Luke, Jeremy, Rare Occasions. Thank you guys so much. This is great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Today's episode was edited by Maxton Hunter, theme music by Brassroots District, and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.